This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, 4th of March, 2022, and we have pretty crazy markets overnight. Of course, the ongoing Russian assault in Ukraine. Really darkening the mood, I think, across the board. But specifically, there was a story overnight of the risk to the largest nuclear energy facility in Russia, the Zaporizhia in Ukraine, a bit apparently overblown in terms of the actual what was unfolding. But of course, this is a market very twitchy around these types of headlines. There was a fire, apparently in some administrative buildings that was put out, supposedly the actual operations of the plant not under a threat. And as far as I understand, they're trying to shut down the plant as Russia has occupied that plant as well. We have to keep in mind on the good side of this, for the rest of Europe at least, if not locally, is that this was not designed to this plant like Chernobyl, which had a very poor, unsafe design because there was no containment vessel or containment structure around the reactors. There are those in place at this Zaporizhia. Don't really want to speculate on that, but that, allayed fears around that, the fact that there's no increased radiation, sort of relieved markets a little bit overnight. But I still think it's pretty remarkable that we sort of chop back and forth, but there's been no real risk off, at least in terms of the broader equity market. So I'll show you in a minute that there's some pretty dire risk off in places elsewhere. But Peter, what are you seeing in terms of market internals, where the focus is in equity markets here?
Yeah, well, I think it's twofold. It's as you said before we went on the podcast, John, it's utter confusion. I think people are investors are confused on what to do. So that's the one angle, which is why you had the MSCI World and the MSCI Emerging Markets being flat yesterday, as you can see in slide two with our theme basket. But then underneath that, you have a whole very skewed part of the return distributions still being dominated by. The negative skew being dominated by e-commerce and bubble stocks. I mean, and biotech. Look at these baskets. I mean, that's they are heavily down, and crypto was down as well. I think the industry is sensing the moment that there are more talks about that this will be an industry that will be under scrutiny due to its potential role in circumventing sanctions, although it could be difficult. But there's a lot of Russian accounts using the crypto exchanges. So let's see what happens with that. But otherwise, logistics and the commodity sector continues to do well. We just got the news yesterday. We'll talk about that. The commodity index from Bloomberg had its biggest weekly gain since 1974. So not a big surprise. Flows are still moving into that area. So that is basically what we are observing right now. And you have European equity futures coming back somewhat. We are down 1.5% in the US Stoxx 50 futures, and remarkably, US equity futures is just flat. And then talking about bubble stocks just very quickly, I think an interesting side note here is that the ARK Innovation ETF has now almost underperformed the Berkshire Hathaway since the start of the pandemic. And if you compare the ARK Innovation Fund to the MSCI World IT sector, then there is no alpha now over a 7-year period. So things have changed dramatically, I would say, over the past year.
That's understatement. Let's go over to you, Ole, because really this is where the real impact is being felt for potential growth, real growth. That is from the energy sector and increasingly for food, which is something we really don't like to see. Especially the food side of things, in terms of how remarkable this is historically, is where this focus should be, I guess, as we look at what wheat is doing.
Yeah, exactly, John. One thing is that we may have to pay a very high price to get into our car or heat up our homes. So we can just put on an extra sweater, but we need to eat. And just take a look at slide 8 in today's deck. This is just a horrendous development we're seeing in global wheat prices overnight. We've been limit up yesterday or several times this week. We are limit up right now in Chicago wheat. Basically, cannot move above trade above $12.09. It is currently bid for more than 130,000 lots. It is up 41% since the invasion began last Thursday. Ukraine, Russia exports around 29% of the global wheat exports, mostly via the Black Sea. And we had a couple of cargo ships taking hits this week, and that basically means that that region is now offline. I just put on into the slide deck as well some of the major importers of wheat, and obviously you can see it's really hitting where. Hitting those that can afford it the least. Egypt is a massive producer, world's biggest importer of wheat. Turkey, Indonesia, Algeria, Bangladesh, also on the list of the top 10. So this is a situation we need to keep a close eye on over the coming days and weeks, considering that we have, in history, while the wheat contract has been established, we've only traded above $12 10 times. So this is historic.
What about the knock-on effects into other grains? I mean, there is at some point some degree of substitution. Maybe is it corn? Corn is the only substitution where you could look for some food imports or.
What? Yeah, that's potentially something that you would imagine that this will change. At least some of the farmers in the U.S. Their views on what acreage they should plant this coming spring. We'll have a report out the end of March. I think it's the last day of the month, basically called Planting Intentions. And with the spreads between wheat and corn and wheat and soybeans blowing out to the extent it is right now, you would imagine that there would be an economic advantage of switching some acreage into wheat. There are some technicalities that may not make it that easy to do, but you would expect that there would be a response from producers across the Northern Hemisphere. But for now, the immediate fear is obviously that the market is running out of wheat to supply. Also because the known global stocks are very much held in China, and China is a massive net importer as well. They're for sure not going to make wheat available for the global market. So the endings, the stocks that we have available is quite thin right now.
Ole, we should. I just looked up. Now that you mentioned Egypt, I just looked up the Egypt, and they had a 122 basis point increase in their 5-year CDS contract yesterday. So it's now, it's trading the highest level since 2013/14. The last time we had very elevated wheat prices. So this is. I guess it's part of this. All these unintended consequences. One thing was the SWIFT and the financial system, but this is another unintended consequences. What will it bring? Right.
It is indeed, and it is part of the trio of commodities that has really taken borne the brunt of this action so far. The other two, obviously, being gas and oil prices, and we're not really seeing much in terms of let up there. Brent spiked to $120 yesterday. There has been some renewed talks that the Iranian nuclear talks could come to a conclusion this weekend with a deal. If that is the case, then Iran could unleash millions of barrels into the market that they have stored in onshore and offshore, and also increase production. So that would go some way to alleviate some of the pressures in the oil market. But the gas market is still very much a key focus, especially in Europe. And the European Parliament, EU Parliament, came out with some suggestions yesterday. They basically take advice from the IEA as to how we can get the consumption from Russia down. And I think you looked at that a bit closer, Peter.
We can. I think we are skipping or we're jumping around the slide deck, but it's fine. So on slide 9, I've put in the link actually to that 10-point plan to reduce the European Union's reliance on Russian natural gas. And there are several things. So there is the LNG capacity. We have talked about that in our equity notes. Gas to coal switch. We've talked about that combined with carbon capture storage, if you want. But already Germany is extending coal-fired power plants, and they're also building up reserves. They talked about air-to-water heat pumps. So I've put in, actually on slide 9 here, Nibe Industrier, which is a Swedish industrial company producing one of the best and high-quality air-to-water heat pumps. You also have some Japanese manufacturers, and I did an equity note you can find on home.saxo a couple of days ago where we highlighted that. So it's and nuclear is into the mix as well. So and solar and wind will be accelerated under certain EU programs. So it's very comprehensive, and there's a lot of data. And I ask you, Ole, because 40% Russian gas reliance is being put out there, but the EU Commission's own estimate yesterday was 24 to 25%. which is quite lower. And they say there is a slim possibility or chance that the EU could have reduced Russian gas reliance, not to zero, but get it very close in that neighborhood by next winter.
Yeah, there is. I think the 25 we have to take with a lot of a pinch of salt, because that is the current level, and we know that Russia has been a very weak supplier now for the past 9 months, especially the last six. And but the result of that has been very, very low stock levels in Europe. So it doesn't remove the it does. We still need to rebuild stock levels over the coming months, and so I think that the figure 25 is should be probably still back to closer to the 40. But just I think just in the report they mentioned something as simple as if we for every Celsius degrees you reduce the temperature in your home, that is estimated to be a saving of around 10 billion cubic meter out of the 150 I believe that we import from Russia on a yearly basis. So just turning it down to and I think apparently the average temperature in a room is around 22 degrees. So folks, turn it down to 19 and help get this gas consumption down.
All right, let's look at I wanted to wind back to a couple of points I made at the beginning here when we're talking about risk sentiment, because I think it's very interesting what's going on there when we look at even in emerging markets. So on slide three, I put up the one of the big ETFs that track emerging markets, the EEM. You can see it's down, but it's not really down particularly more than or about the same as we saw during the 2018 experience. And then drilling down specifically into different currencies, it's quite interesting to see the lack of more significant correlation with widening credit spreads, which are the blue lines for the different countries you can see on the series of charts there, from everything from Turkey, South Africa, Brazil, and including Russia, where we see an obvious insane blowout because of what's unfolding in terms of sanctions. But the underlying currency not really tracking these spread developments, and that's quite unusual. I'm not sure I have an explaining factor here, but I would say it's a weak performance from the dollar that this is the case. Something like Chile, of course, it could be the degree to which this is the world's largest copper producer, but it's still a credit spread. Is a credit spread. It should be eroding the creditworthiness of the sovereign. And it's quite interesting we're not seeing a more significant weakness in emerging market currencies. And then I put up the general risk indicator and just, again, continue to scratch my head a little bit at the degree to which equities, while still choppy and nervous, are kind of sideways when we see the level of strain in our set of risk indicators that we use for this, to create this indicator. Finally, for my part, at least in FX, we're seeing the continuation of trading this as the most negative for the euro and for peripheral currencies to Europe that are very leveraged to European economic growth, especially the Swedish krona within the G10. There's no commodity angle really on the Swedish krona. And then the Central and Eastern European currencies, Hungarian forint, Polish zloty, et cetera, have also been very weak here, while we see Norwegian krona trying to hold out a little bit, and something like the Australian dollar, which is almost custom designed, it seemed, at this moment in time to provide an interesting commodity angle in this market, because the commodities that are most directly affected by the situation in Ukraine are those that Australia is a strong exporter of, including the wheat and an LNG. It's the largest global exporter of LNG. So the Australian dollar continuing to do well, making new highs this morning, and the Aussie dollar taking out the 200-day moving average, and something like Euro Aussie has been incredibly weak. Noticing Euro Yen as well, as European yields come down and the ECB's predictions come down, we're seeing it breaking down below those range lows from late 2021. All right, I'm losing my orientation, guys. I'll let one of you pick up the thread with maybe on the copper angle. Ulla, we talked a little bit about copper there and Chile, but we're finally seeing, after this incredibly long bout of doing absolutely nothing and churning around, copper's on the move. Do you have any sort of what's with the timing here, do you think, if anything?
Well, I think the part of the move we've seen higher here on slide 7 is the simple fact that the commodity, there's such a bid coming into the commodity space right now, and copper having as you mentioned been trading sideways for almost a year, starting to respond also because we have already seen record highs in zinc, we're seeing aluminium surging higher, nickel as well, so it's just providing some tailwind for copper, and we and that that breakout that we've seen this week, this is on the, this is a weekly chart, but on the it's a bit more clear on the daily chart that we've seen this breakout, and that's obviously attracted some fresh momentum buying. Also, some expectations that the worries about Chinese demand starts seems to have been fading somewhat, and you still have to remember Russia is also a major supplier of copper. So again, it's also Russia that's playing its part. And if I should just finish off the commodity sector, John, just on slide 6, just highlighting the commodity sector as a whole, where we got this spot index is surging higher. You mentioned it's the biggest weekly gain that we've seen since 1974. It is record highs driven by record tightness, and that tightness, as we have highlighted on several occasions for months, which is now obviously turbocharged with what's going on in Russia. We're seeing now out of 24 commodities futures, we got close to half, or well, more than half of them trading in backwardation, meaning that the front spread is front month is trading higher than the deferred. So we just got a massive roll yield coming into this commodity space, further attracting investment demand into the space.
All right, and earnings not exactly stealing our attention, especially as earnings season has thoroughly wound down. But is there anything you want to highlight, Peter?
Yeah, so as you said, it's we're on slide 10 now. I mean, the earnings season is finally coming to an end. I've put in the numbers we have on revenue per share, so revenue growth. So when you look at the numbers, it looks pretty impressive, but we have to take into account, of course, that what we are looking at here is inflation driving a lot of these things. What we have seen in the Q4 earnings season is a lot of companies saying, oh, we're seeing very strong revenue growth, but a lot of it is not driven by quantities or volumes that we are selling, but just simply the prices have gone up. So that's something we have to take with a grain of salt. But there you have it. It has been a pretty decent, I would say, Q4 earnings season so far, all else being equal. Next week, we have XPeng, which is an EV maker out of China, will report on Tuesday together with MongoDB. MongoDB is part of this technology sector and part of the pockets that have been hit pretty hard. So I think MongoDB was down almost 15% yesterday on no news, giving you an idea of the sentiment, right? And we have Adidas on Wednesday, CrowdStrike also on Wednesday, and then Hapag-Lloyd and JD Logistics. I think I'll be focusing on from that logistics perspective, given the logistics are doing so well. And JD.com, not the world's largest, but China's largest e-commerce company, with its own warehouses. So it's more similar to an Amazon and not Alibaba, which is just a platform middleman. So that's the focus next week.
All right. And this is non-farm payrolls day. It doesn't feel like it's very important these days with the reality on the ground here in Europe, but let's have a look at it. The macro calendar for today. And by the way, yesterday we did get the US ISM services for February, really underperforming relative to expectations, all the way down at 56.5 versus 61.1% expected and 59 the prior month. This is still suggests an economy in expansion, but the quite a bit of deceleration in that number, and the employment one is quite interesting at 48.5. Whether that is on difficulty of hiring, that could be one angle there, but still, it was the lowest since August of 2020. So interesting to see that as we look forward to today's down from payrolls change expected at over 400,000. And I think more important has been to note that the participation rate has been picking up quite strongly in recent months. So even when you get the unemployment rate steady or even slightly higher, as long as that is down to the participation rate increasing as people are coming back into the workforce, that's not a negative news. So I would just look at mostly at the average hourly earnings today for signs of a wage price spiral and where we're looking for inflation. As we get the next US CPI print next week on Thursday, expected, can you believe this is 7.9%, just 0.1% more than that. We have a new handle we haven't seen since the early 1980s on US CPI. A couple of the numbers there, the Chinese February PPI, a key global benchmark for inflation, that is up. That has been decelerating, but maybe it could start picking back up with these oil prices where they are. And yes, every weekend these days is feeling like a long weekend when you have a hot war, as we have with Russia's assault on Ukraine. I'm very fearful of this continuing to escalate, and especially in terms of the humanitarian impact, now that we're beyond a week into this situation, into this invasion of Ukraine. The weather's turning very, very cold, and maybe and power's going off in places across the country. So I don't know what to say other than it's terrible, and don't really do markets really matter these days when we're seeing something like this unfold? A question I have increasingly every day at this historical moment for the world. All right. To the degree you can, have a great weekend out there. Stay careful, and we'll be back next week with a Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.